evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 27, 2017. Two people were killed along the Uganda-South Sudan border.
Two were immediately beheaded, and among them you identified to be the clinical officer who is operating the Jale Primary Healthcare Center, and the other one is a Ugandan. And the other two were having their throats cut, but halfway.
And another blogger is gunned down in the streets of Juba by a known gunman.
We had a lot of eyewitnesses. They gave some information, which I'm sure will assist us to reach the carpet. Yes, it is disturbing, but we are still investigating. A lot of people on the ground working to make sure that these carpets are brought to books.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governor of Yei River State is accusing SPLA-IO rebels allied to Riek Machar of killing two civilians and wounding scores of others in an ambush near the South Sudan-Uganda border over the weekend. The bishop of Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan confirms the incident took place and says both sides must end fighting. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Juba.
The deadly road attack in Jale village on Friday happened just days after lawmakers from Kajukeji and members of the National Dialogue Steering Committee held consultations with local communities on how to restore peace and create climate for the voluntary return of internally displaced persons and refugees to their homes in Kajukeji. Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses tells South Sudan in Focus the armed men brutally hacked their victims to death.
Group of people who are armed with guns and pangas, and starting arresting five of them, and two were immediately had their heads beheaded, and among them you identified to be the clinical officer who is operating the Jale Primary Healthcare Center, and the other one is a Ugandan. And the other two were having their throats cut, but halfway, and they survived. Now they are in the hospital. In Moyo, and one was missing. They might have taken and killed somewhere, nobody knows. The victims who are in the hospital were able to reveal that those people are IO.
Lokonga says he has dispatched a team to Jale to investigate the incident and track down the culprits. Why Godwill, a spokesman for the SPLA-IO military-appointed governor, Frank Matata, denies his group carried out the attack.
These people were lured to come from the camp and to go and clean their houses around Jale. And they died between Jale and the border force of Uganda border. SPLA-IO has no hand in that. Instead, we condemn the outrageous act of the government of brutally killing and mutilating our own civilians.
But Governor Lokonga denies government's troops killed the civilians and urged the governments of South Sudan and Uganda and the international community to intercede.
The government could not do this one for its own people. I think this group of people have now turned their organization into terrorists. And there's no difference between the ISIL who are beheading people. This movement of Riek Machar is taking a different trend now, which I have asked for an immediate intervention of the two governments, the government of Uganda and the government of South Sudan and the international community. That is a violation of human rights. These people are civilians and they've been killed in cold blood.
Emmanuel Mure Modi, the bishop of the Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, condemned the violence and is urging the warring parties to end the war through peaceful means.
I'm not so happy actually for what has happened, because those are innocent people. And we are on the process of how people could go back, because no one is responsible for human life. Each person will be accountable before the Lord. And to take one's life in a short time like that is not good. So I want to urge both the opposition and those in the government, they have to really come together and look for peaceful means of bringing peace in South Sudan, because people have suffered and it is enough.
Greater Kajukeji is one of the areas in the state that have seen widespread human rights violations since a new wave of fighting broke out in July last year. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Another South Sudanese political commentator was gunned down in Juba over the weekend. Police confirmed that the blogger was killed over the weekend in Juba's Mayo neighborhood in what was described as a drive-by shooting. Relatives of the deceased believe he was killed by people who thought he was close to former Army Chief Paul Malong. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
Relatives say unidentified people in a car who were following Bol Deng Mien Friday evening later shot him 3 times in the back. He was killed instantly. Deng Bol Mayen's relative, Deng Chol, say the victim's family does not know why Mien was gunned down, but says Mien was very active in the social media, often commenting on political issues, including recent controversy over Malong's house arrest.
What we know, the end of this year, we discovered that our brother Paul was very loyal to former General of SPLA Paul Malong Awan. We don't know exactly what is taking place as a relative and who is behind the killing of our brother Paul.
The late Mien had General Paul Malong's picture as his Facebook profile picture. And in a Facebook post on November 23rd, Mien wrote, quote, "The lion has gone for treatment and will return to Juba soon," unquote. Relatives believe that refers to Malong's recent release from the government's house arrest and his departure to Nairobi for medical treatment. Chol says the body of the deceased was flown to his hometown of Abyei for burial on Sunday. Some people in Malong's family believe the killing was politically motivated. Speaking by phone from Nairobi, Malong's wife, Lucy Ayak, says there is no question that Mayen was killed for being a Malong supporter.
Those unknown gunmen, they are targeting Malong loyally. One of them has been killed also on the 16th. A gentleman stole a cake. I'm seeing now it's Malong supporters which have been killed by unknown gunmen.
Ayak says the late Mien was very instrumental in connecting her with her husband, who had all his phones blocked while under house arrest. Ayak is calling on the government to do something about Mayen's murder and bring Mayen's and Akej's killers to justice. Police confirmed the deceased was being followed before being killed. South Sudan Police spokesman Brigadier General Daniel Justice Ashore says police are investigating.
We had a lot of eyewitnesses. They gave some information which I'm sure will assist us to reach the carpet. Yes, it is disturbing, but we are still investigating. A lot of people on the ground working to make sure that these carpets are brought to books.
Government spokesperson Michael McQuay also reiterated that the government is committed to bringing the killers to book. But when asked about political connections to the murder, he declined to comment further. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
Experts are calling on South Sudanese authorities to protect 3 sites the UN Cultural Agency UNESCO recently included on a tentative list of World Heritage Sites. If the sites are approved, officials believe South Sudan could earn millions of dollars in revenue each year. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The Soot Wetlands, Boma Bandingilo Migratory Landscape, and the Dame Zubair Slip Route are slated to be included in the World Heritage Sites list. UNESCO says it is working in collaboration with the South Sudan's Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Ministry to put in place efficient management mechanisms to ensure the 3 national heritage sites are preserved. UNESCO and the Netherlands organized a workshop last week to discuss technical aspects, preservation and development of the 3 sites. Participants are especially concerned about protecting the Boma Bandingilo migratory landscape, which hosts the second largest animal migration in the world. It is located in one of East Africa's most extensive savanna habitats. UNESCO technical expert Koes Meyers says the 3 sites contain some of the highest values that even some national game parks like the Serengeti in Tanzania do not have. He says the Boma Bandingilo National Game Park, which measures an estimated 1.8 million hectares in size, has various species such as elephants, lions, cheetahs, giraffe, and wild dogs, among others.
So it would be good opportunity for South Sudan to keep several options open and really protect this heritage, as it can provide in the future, once peace has come, a really good source of revenue, which is sustainable, aside from oil and things like that.
Tanzania and Uganda are said to earn at least $1 billion annually from national parks, which are visited by thousands of tourists. Once the three sites are developed and peace and stability is restored, Mayor says South Sudan is expected to earn more than what those two countries take in from tourism, something he says will help diversify the country's economy.
And I think South Sudan has really a number of values which can lead to world heritage, both from the cultural perspective and from the natural perspective. The sites are what we call of outstanding universal value. They're outstanding because they are unique in the world. They are universal because they transcend the national boundaries.
Mayor says once developed into a lucrative venture, the three sites in South Sudan will act as a cornerstone to boost peace and development. Ellen Laker, UNESCO's culture program specialist in South Sudan, says the government should work with UNESCO and other NGOs to put in place mechanisms that develop recently identified World Heritage Sites.
One of the initial concerns are, of course, how all these partners and actors will work together. So coordination mechanisms, setting up specific working groups dedicated to world heritage is definitely one of our primary concerns and one of our very first next actions. How these two protected national parks, how the area in between will also be protected.
Experts say the ongoing conflict makes the sites vulnerable to destruction. Charles Yosam, undersecretary in South Sudan's Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Ministry, says the instability across the country limits the government's ability to develop the sites and develop revenue-generating tourist centers. He also says South Sudan needs stronger laws to preserve the three sites.
We are hopeful that in some years, a few months to come, the new laws, wildlife laws, will be out, and the law will give us more power to protect this, not only the natural heritage sites, but also protect the entire biodiversity, because the law we have currently is not very good.
South Sudan ratified the World Heritage Convention in 2016. The convention aims to protect and preserve cultural and natural heritage sites considered to be outstanding value to humanity. Since last year's ratification, the government has been working to identify the country's natural potential, culture, and mixed heritage sites. Ratifying the convention also gives access to World Heritage Funds. About $1 million a year is made available to assist countries to identify, preserve, and promote World Heritage Sites. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are the latest developments in Zimbabwe? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you prefer to plan ahead or be spontaneous?
Yeah, I do prefer to plan ahead. I do plan because sometimes I always tell my friends that at this time I'm where I never wish to be.
Plan ahead because you never know the future. If you plan ahead, you are giving yourself enough time so that time if it reaches, you have something.
I prefer planning ahead because it acts as a backup. You know, when you plan ahead, you try to cover up and unforeseen certainties.
I usually prepare to plan ahead because in most cases, always the best thing is in the future. If you always do things spontaneously in the present, you do anything that comes your way. It's in most cases difficult for you.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. IGAD Council of Ministers is expected to meet for its 59th extraordinary gathering on December 11 and 12, that's 2 weeks from today. The Council is expected to provide further guidelines on the modalities and the structure of the long-awaited forum to revive the collapsed South Sudan's 2015 peace deal. IGAD issued a statement on Friday saying its special envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, met IGAD partners in Juba as part of wider continuous conversation with key South Sudanese stakeholders and the international community for the successful convening of the forum to revive the 2015 peace deal. That statement further stressed that the special envoy briefed the partners of the regional effort in convening an inclusive forum. IGAD says 31 consultative meetings were held with the various parties, estranged groups and other key stakeholders. The parties to the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan include all signatories, regardless of whether they are in or out of the transitional government of national unity. Zimbabwean security forces say order has been restored and they will be returning to the streets. But that announcement was met with fear from many Zimbabweans who remain wary of men in uniform following years of abuses. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare.
These are words that should calm and reassure.
The situation in our country has returned to normalcy. We wish, therefore, to advise the nation that the Zimbabwe Republic Police is now assuming its role as stipulated in the Constitution of Zimbabwe under Section 219.
That is police spokeswoman Charity Chiramba announcing police would return to their beats and conduct joint patrols with soldiers in central Harare, less than a week after soldiers took over security duties during the political upheaval that forced President Robert Mugabe to resign. But in Zimbabwe, where human rights groups have accused the police of shocking brutality, arbitrary arrests, and extortion, these words bring little comfort. Police are so unpopular that the stadium of more than 60,000 people booed loudly when the nation's police commissioner last week pledged loyalty to new President Emmerson Mnangagwa during his inauguration. Activist Promise Mokonazi says he has lost count of the number of times he has been arrested. Maybe 20, he says. Many have been in the course of protesting against Mugabe. But also, like many Hararians, he has run across many illegal police roadblocks. Here is his account of an incident a year ago.
Then suddenly there were police officers who just emerged and they sort of manhandled me and took me to some secluded place where they tried to say, can you just pay a bribe and you go? To which I flatly refused and said, no, I don't want, you have to take me to the police station if I'm under arrest. And so they took me to a police station, to Harare Central Police.
There he learned he had been charged with a litany of offenses, from resisting arrest to insulting the president, which is illegal in Zimbabwe. The case was eventually dismissed. Jacob Mufume of the People's Democratic Party told VOA the police force's behavior going forward could improve or undermine the legitimacy of the new government.
You say police are going to behave normally. We get alarm bells because they've been behaving outside the bounds of the law. We need a transformation, a change to the observance of the law, treating civilians with dignity, doing their duties without corruption, not asking to be paid for doing their work, and behaving like we are in a democratic society.
Police spokeswoman Chiramba would not take questions. When VOA asked her how police would attempt to regain the trust of Zimbabweans, she smiled and did not answer.
Zimbabwe has no shortage of energetic, educated young people, many of them college graduates. But what the country lacks is jobs, and the pressure is on for the new government to turn the situation around quickly. Anita Paul talked to young people on the streets of the capital, Harare, who say they want the new president to deliver on his promise and allow more young people into government leadership.
Innocent Kagadora should not be here. Since he graduated from the University of Zimbabwe in 2015, he has spent 14 hours a day on a rough Harare street corner, selling phones out of a backpack. He's an example of Zimbabwe's soaring youth unemployment problem, which many critics blame on former President Robert Mugabe. His colleagues here call him Comrade Graduate. On a good day, he said, he takes home $10. Not enough, he says, to help his widowed father.
It hurts him a lot to say, my son has a degree, my son is educated enough in Zimbabwe, but he can't even afford, you know, to send me groceries other than the month.
So help me God.
The recent swearing-in of President Emmerson Mnangagwa has given many young Zimbabweans a shot of hope. He has promised to improve the economy, and students say they plan to hold him to that promise. On the first full day of his presidency, student leaders met in the capital to strategize on mobilizing the youth vote for elections scheduled next year. Activist and student organizer Ostalo Siziba.
We will basically be calling him to account in terms of the things that he has promised. So every citizen, every young people are ways to see these things getting into reality.
Some, like Kagadora, also want to see younger people in powerful positions.
Let's have technocrats, not just bootlickers of the regime, not bootlickers of the leadership who are being put in those positions. When we have those people now, I think they can contribute significantly. So what we want now is to say, we're encouraging our government to say, let's look at other countries. Look at France right now. It is one of the youngest leaders in the world. So when you look at that, what does it mean for the nation? I think it's the realization now that the youth are not just leaders of tomorrow, but they're the leaders of today and tomorrow.
At his alma mater, psychology major Nyasha Choga says she wants leaders to change their mentality and focus on the future, not the glories of the past.
You listen to them, most of their speeches, they're still talking about the liberation struggle. I appreciate what they did, yes, but I think it's time for us to move away from that now. The ideas back then, they are not fit for the world that we're in right now.
And they worry about the youth coming behind them, like 16-year-old advocate Kambeu, who really shouldn't be on a Harare street corner selling $11 shoes on a school day. If he could afford school fees, he says, he could do big things.
I want to do politics. I think I'm talented in politics.
Mnangagwa has laid out an ambitious program of economic reform, and millions of energetic, talented young Zimbabweans, like Innocent, Ostalos, Nyasha, and Advocate, are counting on him to deliver. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
From Zimbabwe, we move to Kenya, where a student from Western Kenya is the top performer in the country's recent national primary school examinations. Her success is made extraordinary because she is an albino, a group that has experienced discrimination in Africa, particularly when it comes to access to education. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
Almost 1 million primary school children took the 2017 Kenya Certificate of Primary Education exam, known as the KCPE. Goldilin Kakuya, a girl from St. Anne's Junior School in Labau, Kakamega, received top honors, with 455 marks out of 500.
I was really happy about it. I'm excited a lot because it has passed a message to so many people. So what thrills me most is that it has opened the eyes of many people.
Goldilin's success opened the eyes of many people because she has albinism, a genetic condition that results in the skin, hair, or eyes lacking color. People with albinism often face discrimination in Africa, and children struggle with educational opportunities. Kenyan Senator Isaac Mwaura is chairman of the Albinism Society of Kenya.
People have talent, and given an opportunity, they can do so. So I would want to really say that the young children with albinism across Africa, and indeed the world, because there's a lot of persecution and discrimination that is geared towards people with albinism, that they should feel encouraged that they too can reach at the top, and that families should also embrace children with albinism and also the society at large.
Goldilin's mother, Matilda Chirono Tanga, agrees that discrimination against people with albinism is common.
And because of that attitude, people will not even imagine that these children have a perfect brain. They think they cannot learn, they cannot compete. But the performance or the achievement of Goldilin has proved to the society that albinism is just a condition of the skin.
Goldilin told VOA she worked hard for her success, reviewing her many revision books, asking teachers questions in class, rarely missing her lessons, and doing quite a bit of personal study and group work. She offers these tips to other students.
Pray hard. Do your best. Believe in yourself. Because if you're praying and you're working towards your goal, what can deter you from that? So it's just a matter of being confident. Yes.
All students who received 400 marks or more will be given admittance into the coveted national secondary schools. This year, roughly 10,000 students reached this threshold. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Ye River State's governor is accusing SPLA-IO rebels allied to Riek Machar of killing two civilians and injuring several others in an ambush near the South Sudan-Uganda border over the weekend. SPLA-IO military spokesman denies the accusation. The bishop of Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan confirms that it happened, and he's urging both sides to end the fighting. The deadly roadside attack occurred in Jail Village just days after lawmakers from Kajukeji and the National Dialogue Steering Committee held talks with local communities on how to restore peace and create a climate for the voluntary return of IDPs from their homes and refugee places to Kajukeji. Ye River State Governor David Lokongo Moses told this program that the armed men hacked their victims to death with machetes. Lokongo sent a team to jail to investigate the killings. Another South Sudanese political commentator has been gunned down in Juba. Police say Bol Deng Mayen was killed Friday evening in Juba's Mayo neighborhood. Relatives believe Mayen was killed by people who thought Mayen was close to Army Chief Paul Malong. They say unidentified gunmen were following Mayen Friday evening in a car and later shot him three times in the back. Mayen relative Deng Chol says Mayen was active in social media, often commenting on political issues, including the recent controversy over Malong's house arrest. He discovered, he says, that our brother Bol was loyal to Malong. The late Mayen had General Paul Malong's picture as his Facebook profile picture. And in a Facebook posting recently, he said the lion has gone for treatment and will return to Juba soon. And finally, passports and national ID cards are no longer being processed because a German company contracted by the government for the past 6 years that provided the software for the service has not been paid $500,000. Staff that usually process the applications for passports and cards could be seen sitting at their desks either chatting or watching movies today. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Abie Ping by the Abie Jazz Band.
A bear,
been listening to Abie Jazz Band with the song Abie Ping. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear your comments about our show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on the Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.